Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on efforts by people in two countries to change their nation's policies of required military service.
The way we can change the objectives of treated is, of course, you know, of course, substandard in all, you know, human rights senses.
We tell about attempts to change the system of forced military service in South Korea and Israel. Today on As It Is. South Korea requires all able-bodied male citizens to serve about 2 years in the nation's armed forces. But some object to military service for moral reasons. Most of them are sent to prison. They are called conscientious objectors. That means a person who refuses to serve in the armed forces for moral or religious reasons. Some conscientious objectors do agree to join the military, but they will not carry or use a weapon. Kim Ji-kwon was held in prison for more than a year, near the capital Seoul, for refusing to serve in the South Korean military.
I became a conscientious objector because I learned from the Bible that you have to love your neighbor and your enemy. We should love life.
His father and two brothers all went to jail for refusing to serve in the military. They are members of Jehovah's Witnesses, a Christian group. Jehovah's Witnesses say learning to use weapons or fighting violates their religious beliefs. Kim Ji-kwon says he would like to have served his country in other ways if he had been given the chance.
If there were an alternative service, one that does not go against my beliefs, then I would have done that, a service that does not require actual military training.
The South Korean government says every year hundreds of men are given prison terms of up to 18 months for refusing military service. The group War Resisters International keeps records about the number of conscientious objectors worldwide. Sergei Sandler works for the group. We spoke to him on Skype.
According to the data we have right now, the largest number of imprisoned conscientious objectors, not necessarily the number of objectors themselves, but of imprisoned conscientious objectors, is currently in South Korea. The way conscientious objectors are treated is, of course, you know, of course, substandard in all, you know, human rights senses.
South Korea's Ministry of National Defense says there are no plans to change the country's requirement of military service. The ministry says it must keep the requirement in place because of concerns about North Korea and its military. Lee Jae-sung is a law professor at Konkuk University in Seoul. He says most South Koreans no longer support the government's policies.
The South Korean government has always stressed security and has said that an alternative to military service would harm our safety. But the public no longer believes that. Only the government is holding on to that idea.
Professor Lee notes the findings of a recent public opinion survey. It found that 68% of those who were asked liked the idea of creating an alternative service so that conscientious objectors will not have to go to jail. Kim Ji-kwon says he and the other men in his family did the right thing by going to prison for their beliefs. But he says if he one day has a son, he would not expect him to make the same decision. That is because Mr. Kim believes refusing to serve in the military is a personal decision based on one's own faith. In Israel, some young people are also refusing to obey the country's requirement of military service. They strongly object to the way Israel and its military have been treating Palestinians. Most Israeli women and men must join the country's defense force when they are 18 years old. Men serve for 3 years, women for about two. Religious Israeli women and Arab citizens are not required to do so. Nor are very religious Israeli men known as ultra-Orthodox Jews when they are studying religion. However, that may change under a law being considered by the Israeli parliament. In March, at least 50 young Israelis wrote a letter to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It said they would not serve in the military. The young people said the main reason for their refusal to serve is our opposition to the military occupation of Palestinian territories. They said the Israeli army was guilty of human rights abuses and war crimes, including assassinations and torture. The Telegraph newspaper reported Israeli Finance Minister Yair Lapid answered the letter strongly on his Facebook page. It said he called those who refused to join pampered, wealthy youngsters. In his words, "I'm ashamed of them." The newspaper reported that refusing to join the Israeli military does not necessarily mean a young person will be put in prison. Yet some conscientious or ideological objectors are put in prison. But the report said an Israeli citizen who refused to serve could have difficulty finding a good job or being admitted to a university. The Telegraph noted that a majority of Israelis support forced military service. It said in Israel, army service is seen as a near sacred duty, essential to protect a country surrounded by enemies. And that's our program for today. It was based partly on stories from reporters Jason Strother and Malte Kullenberg in Seoul. We also used information from reports by The Telegraph newspaper, The Associated Press, Al Jazeera, CommonDreams.org, and the Reuters News Service. We would love to hear from you. We read every message you send us. Write to us at VOA Learning English, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA, or send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, and click Contact Us. While you are there, you can read, listen to, and download our programs. You will also find podcasts, captioned videos, and lessons to test your English skills. Follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is on the Voice of America. Overcome. I shall die.
But that is all I shall do for death.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
This is the Health Report from VOA Learning English. Experts are watching the outbreak of a virus in the Middle East for signs that it could spread around the world. David Swerdlow is with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He studies the spread of diseases through large populations. He leads the CDC's response to the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. First, here is the bad news.
30 to 40% of people who get it have died. It's caused illness in multiple countries. The virus clearly spreads from person to person and is severe, and there's no treatment or vaccine.
MERS is a member of the viral family of germs that cause the common cold, as well as severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS. That disease appeared in southern China in 2003. It infected about 8,000 people in 29 countries and killed about 800 before it was contained. The MERS virus first appeared in September of 2012. Most reported cases have been in Saudi Arabia. Now for the good news. MERS does not spread as easily as SARS, says Amish Adalja with the Infectious Diseases Society of America.
With SARS, we saw much more human transmissibility, and we also saw individuals who we called super spreaders, people who disproportionately spread the virus more than anybody else and were really responsible for how the virus made its way all around the world.
Mr. Adalja says there are no MERS super spreaders, at least not yet. The World Health Organization reports 261 MERS infections, including 93 deaths. Other organizations put those numbers higher. In April, there was a sharp rise in cases in Saudi Arabia. Some health experts fear that means the MERS virus has changed or mutated. That would be a danger sign. But the CDC's David Swerdlow says German researchers have examined DNA from some of the new Saudi cases.
The information that they've shown suggests that there has not been any significant change in the virus.
That is, again, good news. But Mr. Swerdlow says researchers need more information to be sure. Scientists still do not know a lot about MERS. They do not even know where it came from, although camels are the prime suspect. On Friday, the CDC reported the first case of MERS within the United States. CDC officials said an American healthcare worker infected with the virus is being treated at a hospital in the northern state of Indiana. They said the patient traveled from Saudi Arabia to London on April 24th and then on to the United States. The CDC is working to identify people who may have been in contact with that patient. And that's the health report.
Music.
I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Christopher Cruz with the VOA Special English Program, Explorations. Today we visit one of the most unusual national parks in the United States. It is called the Dry Tortugas National Park. It includes seven very small islands, about 200 kilometers southwest of the southern state of Florida. One of them was once a prison. Let us begin our visit by imagining that we are traveling back in time almost 150 years.
It is the last few days of July in 1865. The United States Navy steamship Florida moves slowly toward a small island. Members of the crew tie the ship to the dock. Passengers begin to leave the ship. They move slowly in the extreme heat of the summer day. In front of them is a huge red brick building. The passengers walk over a small wooden bridge. It crosses an area of water that circles the huge building. They move slowly to the only door. They pass through the door and stop in front of a group of soldiers.
An officer among the soldiers comes forward and tells the ship's passengers to stop. He looks at the passengers and says, "You are now within the walls of the Fort Jefferson Military Prison in the Dry Tortugas. You have been tried, convicted, and sentenced to serve your punishment here. No prisoner has ever successfully escaped from Fort Jefferson. No one will ever escape. It is more than 200 kilometers across open ocean to the nearest occupied land."
Four of the prisoners who arrived that long-ago day had been found guilty of taking part in the successful plot to murder the President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. One of the prisoners was sentenced for giving medical aid to the man who killed President Lincoln. He was also found guilty of being an active member of the plot. That man was Samuel Mudd. He was a 32-year-old doctor from the eastern state of Maryland. He had been sentenced to spend the rest of his life doing hard labor at Fort Jefferson.
The huge red brick building that faced Dr. Mudd and the other prisoners had six sides. It took up most of the land area of the small island. The six wide walls surrounded a large area of open space in the center. Each wall was about 15 meters tall. Inside the walls were hundreds of rooms. Most of them held huge guns that pointed out to sea. Many other buildings were also inside the huge fort. Soldiers slept in them. Some of the houses were used by the officers. Soldiers and prisoners worked and lived within the walls of the fort. The extreme heat affected them all. Hundreds of seabirds flew over the small island. Dr. Mudd must have believed that those birds would be the only creatures that would ever escape from Fort Jefferson. He must have believed that faraway island would be his new home for a very long time. But he was wrong.
In 1867, Dr. Mudd was helping the prison doctor treat victims of the disease yellow fever. Many died. Soon, the prison doctor also lost his own battle with the disease. Only Dr. Mudd was left to treat the increasing number of men who became sick with yellow fever. Later, the sickness seemed to leave the island. Many of those who survived knew they owed their lives to Dr. Mudd. Almost every man in Fort Jefferson wrote to the President of the United States asking that Dr. Mudd be pardoned because of his work treating patients who had yellow fever. They said Dr. Mudd was a hero. In February 1869, President Andrew Johnson signed a presidential pardon. Dr. Mudd was a free man. He left Fort Jefferson and returned to his home in the state of Maryland. He once again became a family doctor.
The first European visitor to the small islands was the Spanish explorer Ponce de Leon. He arrived in 1513. Ponce de Leon was an older man who was searching for special water that stories said would make him young again. It was called the Fountain of Youth. Ponce de Leon named the little islands the Tortugas. Tortugas is the Spanish word for turtle. Thousands of these creatures lived on the islands. Ponce de Leon was able to capture many turtles to provide fresh meat for his ship's crew. He never did find the special water of the Fountain of Youth. In fact, the little islands had no water at all. The Tortugas were dry. The word dry began to appear on early maps of the area to warn ships they could find no fresh water there.
President Thomas Jefferson took an interest in the little islands as a place that could help protect ships traveling in a large area of water called the Florida Straits. He proposed a military base be built there. In 1821, the United States took control of Florida and its islands. The military fort was not begun until 1848, long after Jefferson's death. The fort was to be the home of 1,500 men and 450 huge cannon. It would become the largest American fort made of brick building material.
Fort Jefferson was never really completed. It had to be worked on continually. The salt air, wind, water, and sand quickly caused problems. The weight of the brick walls made them sink into the sand. It was difficult to keep the fort in good repair. As workers built new parts of the fort, others worked at repairing damage caused by the environment. Slaves and prisoners did the building and repair work at the fort. Most of the prisoners were army troops. They had been found guilty of some crime and ordered to serve their sentences at Fort Jefferson. In 1874, the American Army left Fort Jefferson. Modern artillery made the fort no longer useful.
Today, thousands of visitors make the trip to the Dry Tortugas National Park. Soldiers no longer greet them when they arrive at Fort Jefferson. Friendly members of the National Park Service do. They meet every boat filled with visitors. They smile and say, "Welcome to Fort Jefferson and the Dry Tortugas National Park." The small island's days as a prison are long past. Yet almost every visitor to the Dry Tortugas National Park asks about its most famous prisoner, Samuel Alexander Mudd. They ask to see his room. Most people know that Dr. Mudd did not end his life in the Fort Jefferson prison.
Only a few of the huge cannon remain at the park. These have been left to show visitors what the old fort looked like. The weather continues to affect the fort's grounds and buildings, so workers continue the fight against the severe environmental damage. A government program, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, is providing money to help keep Fort Jefferson standing. Workers are removing and rebuilding damaged areas of the walls.
The park extends over an area of more than 26,000 hectares. Almost all of this is ocean and living coral reefs that protect the little islands. Thousands of different kinds of fish live in the waters near the islands. Many ships have sunk in those waters over the centuries. Many are inside the area that is part of the national park. The wrecks of these ships help provide safe places for many of the fish. Some visitors are lucky enough to see the huge sea turtles that gave the islands their name. The little islands are also home to many kinds of seabirds. Visitors are not permitted on some of the islands in the Dry Tortugas National Park because they would frighten birds that are laying eggs.
When Fort Jefferson was a prison, a sign was placed on the wall for new prisoners to see. It said, "Thee who enter here, leave hope behind." Few prisoners, except for Dr. Mudd, had any hope of ever leaving there. Today, the old fort and empty little islands provide a protected home for thousands of birds, fish, and turtles. Visitors travel for hours on high-speed boats that bring them from the island of Key West, Florida. They swim in the warm waters and enjoy the bright sun. Many explore the underwater shipwrecks. Still others bring tents and spend a few days living on the white sand beaches. The striking natural beauty of the island today seems to clash with its earlier history as a lonely, inescapable prison. Dr. Mudd surely would approve of the change.
This program was written by Paul Thompson and produced by Brianna Blake. I'm Faith Lapidus.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. You can see a video about Fort Jefferson and its restoration on our website, voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for another Explorations program on the Voice of America.